Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our book pick segment. We have a wonderful family of independent bookstores, including the Bennington Bookshop. And we turn to owner Phil Lewis this morning to present a terrific list of books to share. Phil, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners.
Very nice to have you with us. All right, where would you like to begin?
Okay, first up this morning is The Mirror and the Light by Hilary Mantel. London, May 1536. Anne Boleyn, Henry VIII's second wife, has just been executed for treason. Thomas Cromwell, the king's minister, is hungry. He starts to walk away from the scaffold, intent on a second breakfast, but pauses to thank the executioner, a Frenchman brought in specially for the job. In just a few short sentences, Mantel once more conjures up the murky world of Tudor politics. History comes to life, and we are right there at its making. There are plots and intrigue, affairs and betrayal, riot and rebellion. And despite already knowing the outcomes, if you've ever been subjected to English history, the read is gripping and suspenseful. The kingdom is in crisis. The Pope threatens Henry with excommunication if he does not return the country to the Catholic fold. Spain plans an invasion. France has her eyes on the last English holdings on the continent, and Scotland watches for an opening, ready to sweep south if there is an opportunity. Mantel's story unfolds around these various threats as Cromwell schemes to maintain England's position. There's a tweak here, a nudge there, a whispered conversation in the shadows, some money gifted, a title bestowed, and Cromwell's spies are everywhere. It's riveting stuff. History tells us that there was an uprising in Lincolnshire in 1537, and that Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk, was dispatched to quell the rebellion. Mantel takes these facts and fills in the gaps with imagined detail. Henry and Cromwell scheme and plot. Henry does not completely trust Brandon, but Cromwell counsels that this responsibility might encourage Brandon to commit to Henry. Meanwhile, Brandon frets that he does not have the recognition he feels he deserves. The plots thicken. Mantel's attention to detail is superb. It's the little things that bring this novel to life, adding color and dimension. There's a scene where Cromwell is visiting one of the king's palaces and casually observes workmen chiseling off the embossed linked letters H and A, Henry and Anne. But Anne is gone now, and every trace must be removed. Out with the old and in with the new. It's powerful stuff.
Absolutely. Hilary Mantel's latest is Mirror and the Light. Next up?
Next up is Writers and Lovers by Lily King. And people familiar with Boston are really going to love this because it's set there and there's all sorts of little details. Casey Peabody is down on her luck and just about out of options. She aches out a living as a waitress in a restaurant in Harvard Square. Her Cambridge apartment used to be a potting shed and smells like it still is. Last year, her mother went on a trip to South America and died suddenly, far away from home. She's estranged from her brother, and her latest love affair has just run aground. Her best friends are the flock of geese she passes on her way to work. The only mail she gets these days is invitations to weddings she can't afford to attend, or final notices from collection agencies, or rejection notices from publishers. She wants to be a writer, because if she doesn't write, everything else feels worse. And then she meets two men. Oscar is quite a bit older than Casey and has two sons from a former marriage. He is a published author and leads a writing group. Casey doesn't like his writing, but likes Oscar well enough and grows to love his sons. Then there's Silas, closer to Casey in age. But Silas stands her up one day, abruptly breaking off their relationship to travel the western states in search of whatever he's missing from his life. The world turns. Casey comes home one day to a message left on her machine. It's from Muriel, one of the agents Casey has sent her novel. Muriel screams into the machine, "I love it! I love it so much!" And Casey's world changes. Writers and Lovers is witty and funny and sharply observed. Casey Peabody is a triumph. The interview scene when she applies for a job as a teacher is spot on. But there are so many heartfelt moments as Casey struggles to find her feet, then stands her ground and claims her place in the world. This is a delightful read.
Lily King's Writers and Lovers. All right, next book.
Next one is Greenwood by Michael Christie. It's 2038, but don't be put off by the date. Greenwood is not some science fiction dystopia. Yes, the great withering has struck, and almost the entire Earth is a dust bowl. But this is a story about family, and this is where we first meet Jake Greenwood, a forest guide at the Greenwood Arboreal Cathedral, a remote forested island off the coast of British Columbia. It's one of the last places on Earth where there's old-growth forest, and the rich and famous pay big money to walk amongst the trees and breathe in the fresh air. It's Jake's job to lead them. But who is Jake, and how did she end up here, on an island with the same name as hers? We step back to 2008. Liam Greenwood is a carpenter. His specialty is building and renovating homes using timber he salvages from an old farm on the Canadian prairies. He's alone, working on a mansion in New York, when he falls from his scaffolding. As he lies on the floor of the living room, slowly waiting to die, he replays events from his life. We travel further back in time to 1974 and meet Willow Greenwood, an environmental activist. She's freshly released from jail, back on the road, planning her next protest, well stocked with sugar to sabotage the machinery used to devastate the forests. 1934. Everett Greenwood lives alone in a hut in a stand of maples. He ekes out a living tapping the trees each season, selling the syrup. On his rounds one morning, he hears a cry. There, hanging from one of his taps, is a papoose. Inside, there's a newborn baby. 1908. The Greenwood brothers are orphans. They are the sole survivors of a train crash near Kingston, Ontario. The townspeople scribble names on scraps of paper and draw two from an old coffee pot, Harris and Everett. The Greenwood name comes from the firewood the boys sell to make a living. The wood has a reputation for being green, too fresh to burn properly. And there we have it, the family tree traced back to its roots. We move forward again, revisiting each of the stops once more. But now we know the characters and their stories. The pace gathers. The final pieces of the puzzle fall into place. This is an epic read.
The name of the book is Greenwood by Michael Christie. We probably have time for just one more.
Okay. So this one is The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek by Kim Michelle Richardson. Set in 1930s Kentucky, The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek explores the life of Cussie Carter, a traveling librarian with the Kentucky Packhorse Library Project. It's her job to carry books through the hills and hollows of eastern Kentucky to the outlying homesteads. For some families, Cussie is their only contact with the outside world. She's an inspiration to young and old alike, carefully selecting the books she carries to meet the needs of the people she serves. These are hard times, and people are eking out a gray existence. Cussie brings a spark of hope into their difficult lives. Her father is an ailing coal miner. Elijah is keen to marry off his daughter as soon as possible to make sure she will be looked after once he goes. He's offered a dowry of 10 acres of land to any man who will marry Cussie, but still he has trouble finding a suitable partner for his daughter. That's because Cussie is a blue. She's the last in a long line of people who have a rare genetic trait that causes an enzyme deficiency. The deficiency results in methemoglobinemia. It can be treated, but the medications have side effects. People with the condition have skin that is tinged with blue. As such, they are considered colored and are subject to Kentucky's repressive race laws. The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek is a fascinating read. The historical information is absorbing. The concept of the Packhorse Library is brilliant. Richardson also uses her novel to explore the racial prejudice and injustice in 1930s Kentucky. But this is Cuss's story. She is independent and feisty, endearing and kind. She's beautiful and blue. She deserves love, but will she find it?
The name of the book is The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek. There we go. The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek. It's by Kim Michelle Richardson. Phil Lewis, I am sorry we're out of time, but people can see the complete list on our website, and I'm sure they can do it at your website as well.
We'll post it on our website, too.
Yours is BenningtonBookshop.com. Ours is WAMC.org/roundtable. Phil Lewis, a great pleasure as always. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Joe.
Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.